they started up here and started really mainly in the 3C days when they were hauling some of the boys that came in here, and there were 3C cats up above.
Mm-hmm.
And they take a bunch of them up on a barge and deliver them and their supplies and all that stuff for the Forest Service.
Oh, we've got quite a few pictures of CCC camps, and we were wondering about the logistics of those camps and having that many people up here, and I was wondering how they got them up there.
That's how they got them up there. I came up once, my sister and I, and they had a bunch of boys from New York and New Jersey, and they hauled them up to Lake on the barge, and they loaded all their stuff on there, and it was quite interesting. They had never been out west, and they were scared of everything. And of course, the local yokels around, they told them all kinds of stories, you know. That really frightened them. They were frightened. They couldn't drink water back home, and they tell them to go get a drink of water. Why, they wondered where the faucet was, where they could get it. And of course, the wild animals, they were afraid of the bears. And well, they pulled all kinds of funny things.
All that towing was done with it by the original Tyee.
Yeah, I think that was.
Tyee 2 is the one that's up there.
That original Tyee, did they haul it in here? They didn't build it here, did they?
Which one?
The first Tyee.
As far as we know, we can't answer one way or the other. I think they must have been hauled in because I've never heard of any one saying it was built here, and I don't. Probably was hauled.
Did you ever hear of it being on Ponda Ray or the river or anything?
No, I don't think it was ever in there.
I don't think either one of us know anything about the original Tyee.
No. Huh. Do you, like how big it was or anything like that?
Probably about the same size as the old one, wasn't it?
It was smaller.
It was smaller?
Yeah.
Did they use a different drive shaft and all that stuff?
The first Tyee wasn't here when you got up here?
No.
We came here in 46, and the Tyee 2 was built. Probably started in 44. And it was 81 feet long. About 18 feet wide.
80 feet long. What kind of power did it have?
Steam power, fired with 4 foot cordwood. Carried about 150 pounds of steam.
Wasn't that kind of a late date to build a steamship?
Well, at that time they were still towing logs and things up here.
The reason they stayed steam was the fact that...
Oh, well, yeah.
That
it's the cheapest.
War was on, or shortly in that era, and they couldn't buy all new stuff. They couldn't build a new boat. They couldn't get a permit to build a new boat, so their mother, dad sent me. He jacked up the whistle and built a boat under it. And the equipment in it, I think, some of it came out of the original Tyee.
Do you know where they built it?
Right down there, that aluminum building there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And who built it?
Cap Markham and Mona Beth. I don't know who else wrote them.
Were you living here at the time?
No, yeah, we all lived in Sandpoint at that. Well, not Cap Markham, but my folks and, you know, we came from Clearwater area, but we were raised in Sandpoint.
Hmm.
And then they built that just before we, and launched it just before we came up.
So you weren't at the official launching ceremony?
I don't know. I wasn't here.
We came in the spring of 40, spring of 46, and the boat was in the water, and we used it that year. I think they used it partly in the year 45 also.
Did you pilot it at all?
We all took turns.
Did you? What? I mean, how did it work? I mean, what did you do to make it work? I don't...
Well, they had a captain, which was, we always called it, when we're dad, the captain, and we had a fireman and a deckhand.
Wasn't it called an engineer?
Engineer, whatever you want to call him.
The deckhand was? Or the deckhand or the fireman was called the engineer?
The fireman, I think we called the engineer.
Everybody took their turns doing this and that. You worked on shift. If we get a tow and start down the lake, well, we'd take 4-hour shifts. You'd be the fireman, you'd be the deckhand, and you'd also be the pilot at night, or during the day when everybody was sleeping. When you left the dock, you never stopped until you got back, unless the wind stopped.
So, say, what was the job of the pilot?
The pilot?
Mm-hmm.
To make sure he didn't hang up on a shoreline someplace to take out somebody's dock.
That's a big wheel in it, and you just steered it like you did a boat or a car.
The steering wheel was roughly, 6 feet in diameter. And also big.
I don't think it was quite that big, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a pretty big hole in the floor.
Where would you be taking the logs from and to?
We towed them up from various places on Priest Lake. First at 46 from the Hunt Creek area, and then up at Indian Creek. And as years gone by, then we went to Two Mile Creek, and then we went to Lionhead, the upper end of the bay, lake at Squaw Bay.
How long did it take you to get a boom from Lionhead down?
We had good going, we'd make about a half a mile an hour, a round trip from Coolin to Kavanaugh Bay and pick up the boomsticks and go to Squaw Bay and come back down, and we made it in 60 hours.
And you were on the boat, all three of you were on the boat at the same time, the whole time. Was there, I gather there was a cabin, or like a sleeping quarters?
Yeah, well, in the pilot house we had three single boats.
How about food?
Got a kitchen in the stern.
To take
care of. Gas stove, gas refrigerator.
That came afterwards. I worked 1 year on the boat, and we had a 2-burner Coleman, and no refrigeration. And you got cold water out of the lake and put stuff in that and kept it in the shade. And then after Mother and I quit going with them, we got started on our homes here. And then they bought a refrigerator and a stove with an oven. And I razzed my dad every year, all the time. Boy, you sure got fancy after we left.
Was that first year that she's talking about? Shorty Brackenlockdorf up here, he cut ice from the lake out there.
Uh-huh.
He did it right out here. He'd float a cake of ice. And by floating, I mean he'd take a saw and cut it all the way around.
A great big one.
And then he'd cut it in chunks and put it in the ice house. And when we got ready to go up the lake, we'd go get a chunk of ice and put it in a wash tub and put it down in the hull of the boat in the forward section. And put our vegetables and milk and stuff in there.
Quite a bit of it was kept in a bucket.
What was the layout of the boat? Was like the hull this big and empty, or how was the layout of the boat?
You had a big boiler in it and a firebox on it big enough to handle 4-foot wood or longer. And then there was storage space in the boat for roughly 10 cords of wood, which you'd use most of all of it on an average tow. It would happen when you'd pull out of here and we'd go to Kavanaugh and pick up the sticks and end up in Squaw Bay or Mosquito Bay at the upper end of the lake. You get up there and we'd cut out a boom. And cutting out a boom, we took the small boat to Ridley and went around, we took the boom sticks and put them around where the logs that were in the lake. Mm-hmm. And coupled them together and then started down the lake. But
what are boom sticks?
Boom sticks were, they were dry white pine logs that were roughly 40 feet long with a hole in each end with a chain in it. And one end of the chain had a big round link in it, and the other end had a bitch link in it. And the bitch link is a long, narrow
toggle-like thing.
Toggle deal. When you could turn the toggle to toggle it on the end, and you just turn that up, and you could slide it through the hole, and then turn sideways and pull it up. One job you did, you had to turn the boomstick over with your cork shoes to put the toggle down through so that when you let it come up, the toggle was on top.
So they were out walking on these boomsticks then?
Yeah.
Did you ever do that part of the job?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One time I walked the full length of 60 boomsticks in Indian Creek Bay and walked off right off the end of one. The last one.
You would reuse those then?
Yeah.
You'd bring the boom down and you would
unhitch the boomsticks and take those back up for the next one?
We had extra boomsticks. We'd bring a boom down of a million board, round figure of a million board feet. Take roughly 60 boomsticks, which were roughly 40 feet long.
I'm glad to
see you. Made just what we called a big bag boom, I think. If you saw that picture, there would show what we called a bag
boom. Well, we're here with an interview. Can I call you back a little bit?
Take out all the extra boomsticks around the boom that we didn't use and cut those out and use those for a tow line. Tow line was about 300 feet long, but rope, vanilla rope was about 3 inches in diameter.
Why did you need that long of a tow line?
The farther back the tow was, the less pressure you got from the bore from the propeller on the boom.
How did they keep the logs before you got down there to put them in a boom?
They were inside of a boom.
Were they?
It went from one place on the shore to another. Like in a bay, they'd anchor on a tree over here and come out and put an anchor with a buoy out in the lake and take their end of the shore. And we'd go up there and open that up, take the boom and go right inside of it.
Like tow the boom with the boat all the way around it, like that?
It's a little boat with a little rigging.
That was what they called a work boat, because it did all the close-in shore. The tie had too deep a draft to get him close to shore.
How deep a draft did it have?
About 6 feet. At least that, maybe 8.
Oh, gosh.
Six.
Probably about 6, because you were asking about the what was down below the boat. We told about and where the engine was and all that stuff, but up in the forward bow we had a bed down there, and mother would sleep down in the hold, and sometimes I did. It all depended if I was on helping pilot or something, I'd take my turn at the sleeping in the pilot house, but quite often I slept down in the hold. And it was just the front end of a boat with a bed down in there. It wasn't very fancy. And you climbed a ladder to go up and down.
Was that kind of, did you get any like claustrophobic feeling?
Well, I suppose if you were intended to be in that line, why you could, but it didn't bother us. By the time you got time to go to bed, well, you were pooped anyway, so we just went down and went to sleep.
Were there other tugboats on the lake pulling booms at that time?
No. Mm-hmm. When we first came here, we towed for Diamond Match and Schaefer Hitchcock Pole.
They didn't have their own boats up here?
Mm-hmm. Oh. The North Navigation Company had a contract with the Diamond.
Did they pull booms for them down on the Pend d'Oreille?
Yes, they had. They took a lot of out of Back River.
That was just previous, probably, to when we came up here. When that roads and trucks came, they built trucks and they could haul, and it was cheaper. Their logs weren't in the water. It would maybe be a year from the time it was they logged and put it in the water and got it down to the mill. Over that period of time, the money was all tied up, and the other way was so much cheaper for them and so much quicker to get their money out of them.
Well, see, at the time when we're talking about towing on Priest Lake, there wasn't a local road up the east side of Priest Lake. So at Indian Creek, they built a flume. When they build a flume, they go clear up the creek someplace, and they put a dam in, put a little sawmill in, start sawing the lumber, and as they start at the upper end and come right down to the lake, and they build it every day. When they figured they were going to build 100 feet or 200 feet of flume in one day, they put a little water in the flume that had already been constructed, flume the lumber down, and then keep on going. Most flumes kind of a footwalk under, a catwalk, whatever you want to call it, and some of them had it on, right on the top of the V, just a 10-inch board to go upstairs across like that. They were right level with the top. And some of them had them down on the side. And what they'd do, they'd let the water build up in that little dam up the creek. And then it'd get pretty well filled up, and then everybody was skidding logs to the flume, where they'd tell them at 10 o'clock we'll have a flood. They open the dam and down comes the water, and then they roll all the logs into the flume and they end up into the lake.
Huh.
And then we go with the boats and go up there and get it and bring it down. We'd bring them down and put them in the river while high water was on. And then as soon as they started the drive, when they took the drive from the outlet of Priest Lake to Newport, then we didn't put any more logs into the river. We'd put them in the cooling storage, and then the next spring, as soon as the water came up, we'd clean out the cooling storage of roughly 25 million, and that'd start the drive for the next year.
Huh.
And once after they started the drive, we never put any logs in the river until the next day, next year. When I say drive, this is a crew of men and equipment that follow the logs down from the high water and pick up what they call the rear. Everything that's ended up on rocks and on the shoreline and wings in the river and stuff like that.
Did you, so you would start work in April, maybe, and go until October?
We would get the boats ready in the first part of April. The U.S. Coast Guard would come along and give us an inspection, and then we'd go to work. And that would last until December.
As soon as you were done with one trip, it was turning around and going right
back up. When we finished with one trip, the first thing we did was fill the boat with wood again. Maybe we'd have 2 days or 3 days or sometimes 4 days, all depending. How active they were in the woods, and we just go get back and get another.
Did you put the wood in the boat manually?
Mm-hmm.
Carry
one
it
piece
on?
At a time.
And in the firebox manually, one piece at a time.
How much wood did you have to put in the firebox at a time?
I would say, if you got a good fire, it all depends on the size of the wood, but maybe just 10 or a dozen pieces, 4 feet long. It all depends.
It's a big firebox.
Mm-hmm. If you got a good fire going, you might get lucky to get it to last half an hour.
Now this shows my ignorance about steaming. But did you put water into the steam?
You have to put water in a boiler to make the steam.
Uh-huh. So.
And then the boiler consists of a big firebox and a bunch of flues and in an area to hold the water, and the water circulates around the flues, and the flues get hot from the heat in the firebox.
But so you're not having to put water in there all the time? Then.
Oh, you just lift the water glass and it's down where you put more in. And that's a steam injection deal. You open a couple of valves to get it just right. It creates a suction and sucks the water into the boiler, and you watch the water glass, and when you got all the water in, you watch it close the valves.
Where's the water coming from?
Out of the lake.
So there's pipes running down below the boat then.
Yeah. Same as your boat that you run, you'd suck water out of the lake today with the boat that Grandma and Grandpa got down there and goes through the engine and back into the lake.
So you would then have to use your winter months to stock up for yourself enough wood to run.
No, somebody else always cut the wood. First year we cut wood out on the Jack Pine Flat, and mostly everybody cut wood.
Those days
of cordwood were about $8. I think the most they were paid were about $8 a cord. Of course, that was 4 foot wood and still stacked in the wood.
Where did you have your wood stacked?
That big long shed up the top of the hill that held for roughly 100 cords.
Would you bring it down on a truck or something? In the pilot house, is that what you call it? What sort of controls were up there?
You had the steering wheel and two little pumps or levers you pulled.
What'd they do?
One was for forward and one was for reverse, one was stop and the other was for the speed.
You rang bells down in the engine room when you pulled those, and then you had a code that told the engineer what to do, because down there he didn't always know what was going on.
Did you work engineer too?
No, I piloted. They started to teach me to grease, and I already knew how to put wood in. We had a steam set up heat in our home in Sandpoint, and I loaded lots of wood, but when they started to teach me to grease, I said that's where I quit. And I was going up and down trying to catch the cup as it went up and down to give something to it.
What did you have to grease?
Well, the engine, you have to grease that. What was it, once a month?
Once
an hour. Everything was moving, you know. It got rocker arms and they're going up and down, and there's a cup and one here and a cup down here. You're trying to catch them. I didn't think I liked that too good.
And there's always problems, so you had to be able to work on the engine yourself and take care of the pipes.
Never had any problems, and I mean,
steam engine is not as complicated as a gas and a diesel.
Don't think we ever had a breakdown. Of course, we always had, when you had your inspection, everything had to be in good shape, or you didn't get your go-ahead for the season.
Did they watch you pretty closely?
Oh, yeah.
Coast Guard made a boiler inspection. Then you see your life-saving equipment. Make sure you have a little boat with a lantern and a hatchet in it. Which was on top of the boat.
What happened to the original tie unit?
I think, if I remember correctly, what Mr. Elliott told me, that they took it out in the middle. They took all the machinery out of the boat, took it out in the middle of the lake, and burned it and sunk it. That's the way they got rid of all the steamboats in years gone by.
Why did they want to do that?
Because they weren't any good for anything. The only reason they got destroyed was because they were past repair.
They turned around and built the Tyee 2.
Mm-hmm. Built the Tyee 2 cheaper than you could probably repair the old one. Plus the fact they wanted a larger boat.
And you had to have a place to, you have to have what you call a ways to pull them out of the water if you want to repair them. So, I mean, it enters into a lot of, it takes more, you know, when you start repairing something, it takes more money than it does to build it from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Once you build it, like the Tyee, it's the Tyee 2, which was built right here. You take that boat and put it in the lake. And then if the bottom got rotten in it or something like that, you have no way to take it back out of the lake. So consequently, you'd have to build something to take that boat out of the lake. Equipment and everything would cost quite a big good sum. The contract that they had with the diamond was supposed to be for 10 years, which it was, and awarded it.
So that's, they moved up here after they got the contract for 10 years?
No, Northern Navigation came in about 26 or 27. And worked off and on.
They hauled freight and passenger, whatever happened, wanted to go up to the upper lake.
Who consisted of the Northern Navigation Company?
My father, Ed Elliott, E.J. Elliott, and a fellow by the name of Ralph Smith. What was the other guy's name? He never came up here, but...
Yoakum.
They were the... That was the company.
Originated in
Ponderay. My dad was on Ponderay from about 1906 with folks. And then cars got, built and roads got built. And so their freight line that they had up on Ponderay, they went to Hope and Garfield and Bayview and Cedar Creek and all kinds of little localities where people lived and delivered freight or passengers. People would ride on the boat and go up, and the boat would leave Sandpoint and go to Bayview and then come back the next day. then, so that kind of went down the drain at times, and so then they had been working up here doing odd jobs around for this one and that one, and then they started in with the towing up here. And
so Captain Markham was an employee of the Northern Navigation Company?
He was the builder of the boat. He didn't ever work on the boat.
He just built the boats for them.
Yeah, and he's an old timer from Seniapatine. He's buried over there. You probably heard of him.
Uh-huh.
And he used to run the ferry, the Queen Ferry. His wife just passed away about, four years ago or so. He's been gone for several years.
How many boats did he build for the Northern Navigation Company? Do you have any idea?
No.
Who was up here working in like 26?
Well, he did run the what they call a launch. Those were small little engines, little boats. I mean, what, 20, 35 feet long at the most, I suppose. And he did run those up here for them, but he never worked on the Tyee. And he hauled freight and stuff. In the about 35, he was running, I don't even know the name of the boat, but I rode up to Beaver Creek with him and spent 2 or 3 weeks up there with the ranger and his wife. And he let off pound of nails, 10 pounds of nails or something, you know, produce or whatever they had for the different places going up the lake.
Would that launch be the Seniapatine? Would that be the name of the launch that he was running?
That was his own boat.
That was his, I think. And I think that was over on the river, wasn't it?
It was here.
Was it here?
He built about four boats that I know of for North Bend.
Which four were those?
Be the Tyee one. I don't know. I should correct that. He built the Ridley and Sunnyside and Pondere Lake in 32 or 33. And then I know he built one other small boat here, and then he built the Tyee 2.
What do you mean, that other small boat, the Turgeot?
No, I'm talking about one of your
dad's
small.
Okay.
Now, we've got a picture of the Turgeot, and on the back of it, it says Markham with a question mark. He built that one?
Yes, he built that. He built that in about 48.
Yeah, I was in the late 40s or early.
Well, we came in 46 and he built it after that.
Well, did he build it under the Northern Navigation Company or did he do it on his own?
No, that was.
He built for the Forest Service.
Forest Service, that was his own.
He built that in the old Blister Rock buildings in Kalispell Bay. Yeah. They had a dock out there one time.
When did they bring the Ridley up here?
Ridley was brought up here in probably 45. We came in 46 when it was here then. That's when they just nicely started at that time. And you were talking about Mark not running the boats. He ran the Tyee 1 up here.
I guess that's right. He got hung up on the rock, didn't he?
What rock?
Well,
big rock in behind Bertho Island.
Forgotten that.
And he hung himself high and dry on the rocks out there. A fellow here, Raymond Slee, had a little steamboat run around here. And Mona's dad was with Markham. He wanted to blow the whistle, holler for help, and Markham says, no, I'll get off myself. So he finally got off the rock by himself.
What did it do to the boat?
Nothing. You're talking about a boat probably had about 3 or 4 inch planking in it. 3 inch planking.
Hmm.
And it, the Ridley was about 40 feet long, and it was covered with metal. You could run up against stuff with it and everything. And a couple of times I can remember coming down the lake and on the last tow after we got finished, I'd take the Ridley and break the ice so we could bring the Tyee through. It didn't, it just cut the hole right through it. Because that ice, thin ice is just like glass. And it just, you think it's a thin skinned boat, it cut through for no time.
Was the Tyee 2 pretty thin-skinned?
Pardon?
Was the Tyee 2
that was the one that was...
Oh, no. No, it had about 3 inch planking.
3 inch planking. Wood would sliver it up, you know, and deteriorate the wood. But the metal on the, that they, sheet metal that they put around the ribbon, that protected the wood, so.
Well, Tyee 2 up there now doesn't have anything left of the steam engine. And it's got a little six-cylinder engine that you can see through the water. What was that for?
There's what up there?
It's an engine.
Is an engine in it all out?
Yeah, but they didn't take it out.
What was it for?
Well, originally, when Mona's dad sold the Tyee 2 to the Hull brothers, they lived in Priest River. The first thing they did was come into the cutting torch.